Welcome to our Physiological Reviews podcast. I am Dr. Matalon, Editor-in-Chief of Physiological Reviews. Today, I have the great pleasure of hosting Dr. Wenzel, a world authority on the diagnosis and treatment of asthma. As you know, approximately 25 million Americans suffer from asthma. This equals to about 1 in 13 Americans, including 8% of adults and 7% of children. It is the leading chronic disease in children. In 2018, asthma accounted for almost 10 million office visits and 3,500 people died. The subject of this podcast has significant implication to the U.S. public health. Dr. Wenzel was the senior author of an authoritative review entitled, Are We Meeting the Promise of Endotypes and Precision Medicine in Asthma?, published last year in Physiological Reviews. It has been downloaded thousands of times and received many citations. Dr. Wenzel, you are a leading physician scientist who has made huge contributions to our understanding and treatment of asthma. Could you tell us what is asthma and how is it treated today compared to 20 years ago?
Well, first, thanks to you, Dr. Matalon, for inviting me to do this podcast. It's certainly a pleasure to be here. Asthma is an umbrella term that encompasses a certain type of symptoms, things like wheeze, chest tightness, shortness of breath, sometimes cough. So really kind of a broad range of respiratory symptoms in the presence of lower airway obstruction that traditionally is either reversible to a bronchodilator or which has underlying hyperreactivity to nonspecific drugs which cause bronchoconstriction. And the airways of an asthma patient are traditionally more sensitive to those medications than the ways of a healthy person. Those are very broad terms that define asthma and why we refer to it as an umbrella term, because there are multiple different ways you could get to that presentation, that combination of symptoms and that combination of physiologic changes, which of course have been the hallmark of asthma for 100 years regarding the reversibility and then the hyper-responsiveness to nonspecific bronchoconstrictive agents.
Thank you very much, Dr. Wenzel. In your fascinating article, you introduced the term molecular phenotyping. This is a very interesting concept. Could you explain to our audience what it means and how does it apply to the diagnosis and treatment of asthma in your patient?
The molecular phenotyping, I think, is a huge advancement in our understanding of asthma. I think I started out with the definition of asthma, which is a very clinical definition. It is symptoms. It is lung function changes. There is no molecular biology that goes along with that. And that has led, I think, over the years to really non-specific treatments for asthma. So things like bronchodilators, long-acting beta agonists, short-acting beta agonists, muscarinic agents, et cetera. And then non-specific anti-inflammatory agents, corticosteroids, which have been the mainstream of our treatment of asthma for many years. And that was really because we did not understand what was the underlying biology that was driving these clinical changes. And then once we kind of started looking, we found that, yes, inflammation is part of it. There clearly is our increase in the smooth muscle, the size, the contractility potentially, et cetera, all of those things. But we could never come up with something that just covered everyone, that you could find this change or that change that just hallmarked every patient with asthma. And again, this led us to the concept that, gee, maybe asthma is not a single disease. Maybe asthma is many more than a single disease. And maybe if we start to do things like phenotyping, which is actually the clustering of characteristics, and they can be clinical, they can be genetic, they can be molecular, they can be physiologic, all of those things, how they relate to each other allows us to define phenotypes. And again, we started out with sort of the concept of clinical phenotypes, but we've moved over the years to molecular phenotypes because we've been able to get samples from the airways of people with asthma, from blood of people with asthma, and look at broad omics types of approaches where we can identify patterns of gene expression, patterns of protein expression, even patterns of lipid expression, all of which relate one to the other. So a molecular phenotype is a group of asthma patients who is identified by a specific pattern of molecular expression, which differs from the person next to them or the group next to them. They are a specific molecular phenotype. And that's really critical from the standpoint of moving our treatment approaches forward. Now we're able to say, this group of asthma patients, even though clinically they look pretty similar, is identified by very specific molecular pathways, whereas B over here has a whole different group of molecular pathways that are driving their disease, and therefore you would not treat group B with the same treatments that you're using to treat group A. And that is the huge advance that I think molecular phenotyping has given us. It's allowed us to bring in precision medicine approaches. It's allowed us to bring in molecularly targeted therapy that is appropriate for that specific molecular phenotype.
Wonderful. And it's reminiscent of what happened to women with breast cancer.
Absolutely.
And breast cancer used to be a general term. As you are aware now, there are all types of breast cancer depending on phenotype. The idea of personalized medicine is absolutely what we all strive in at, and we want to be treated for a particular disease. In your article, you refer to something called type 2 biologic therapies. This sounds futuristic, if you will, and exciting, and different than just having corticosteroids that everybody takes. Would you be so kind to expand on this a bit?
Type 2 biologic therapies, I think, are certainly the big advance we've had in the treatment of asthma since the introduction of inhaled corticosteroids, which is now 40 plus years ago, inhaled corticosteroids have been around. So type 2 biologic therapies are those therapies that are targeted to the old traditional Th2 cytokine. So the Th2 cytokines, classic canonical Th2 cytokines, are IL-4, 5, and 13. And these cytokines, I think, are now realized that these cytokines are produced by a variety of different, not just Th cells. And so that's why we've moved from the term Th2 to type 2 asthma to understand that they can many sources. Anyway, these targeted biologics are monoclonal antibodies, for the most part, that are targeted towards either the cytokine itself or the receptor. And there's now a total of 5 different type 2 biologics that have been introduced on the market, 3 to the IL-5 pathway, 1 to the IL-4 and IL-13 pathway, and then, of course, the anti-IG, which was actually introduced close to 20 years ago now, and not specifically type 2 high, but often gets lumped into that category. But each of them blocks a specific pathway. And if you get it right on the basis of what we understand biomarkers to predict, so biomarkers currently include things like blood eosinophils, eosinophils being, of course, an inflammatory cell that has been associated with asthma for many, many years, sputum eosinophils, which also can be collected and performed in certain centers, but are certainly not a biomarker that is routinely available. And then a more recent biomarker, nitric oxide, that is measured in exhaled breath. And exhaled breath can be obtained relatively deeply now, and also is an indicator of type 2 inflammation. If individuals have elevations in these pathways beyond what one would see in a normal, healthy population, they would start to fall in this category of type 2 high molecular phenotype of asthma. Typically, because inhaled corticosteroids are a lot less expensive than the biologic therapies, if a patient is new to one, a new diagnosis, you would always treat them with the less expensive, more broad treatments first. But then if they fail those for any variety of reasons, and there are a variety of different reasons why people fail those medications, then that next option is to go to the type 2 biologic therapies, which target specifically these pathways, typically in patients who have failed inhaled corticosteroids and often require oral corticosteroids. And taken many of these patients who were suffering lots of side effects of oral corticosteroids and remove the need for oral corticosteroids from their treatment and allow them to specifically be treated with these monoclonal antibodies targeted specifically to type 2 inflammation.
This is fascinating, and I'm sure it will have very positive effects to a number of patients. Taking corticosteroids for 30 or 40 years, it's not a good thing. Anything to diminish that and to help people would be great. Dr. Wenzel, you and your colleagues like Dr. A, who was the first author on the article, have been in the forefront of developing animal models for asthma. Can you give us some examples of how conclusions from animal studies have helped you treat your patients?
Yeah, and of course, I like to think of all of the good research as actually being a very integrative approach, utilizing human samples, going back to the mouse, starting in the mouse, going back to the human, that they really require constant interaction. And that's one of the things that I think Dr. Ray and I have accomplished really very well, is she's a very classically trained animal model immunologist, and I'm definitely more the translational physician scientist, so we work together very well. But certainly the whole concept of TH1 and TH2 inflammation is largely supported in asthma in the early stages on the basis of animal models, that clearly the concept of TH2 cells making IL-4 and IL-13, and that IL-4 and IL-13 would contribute to physiologic and sometimes inflammatory changes associated with asthma, that required a tremendous workload in the mouse space. And so really, I think, helped to push a human side of asthma to start looking at these pathways in humans. And of course, this is where, again, I think the integration becomes so important, because as you know, a lot of the early trials in humans of these type 2 biologics, these TH2 biologics, actually didn't work because they were targeted as though asthma was single disease, based on the fact that we had a mouse model that suggested, well, this mouse model represents asthma, therefore humans should respond just like the mouse does, without getting the concept that this mouse model only was representative of a portion of the asthma population. It really required that back and forth. But probably the biggest advance was the TH1 and the TH2 story. And then, of course, more recently, we've had the innate lymphoid cell story, which has also been heavily dependent on mouse models. And I think there's reasonable evidence to suggest that the ILC2 cells, the innate lymphoid type 2 cells that are producers of IL-5 and IL-13, play a significant role in patients with adult onset eosinophilic asthma. We haven't completely confirmed that yet. That's going to take a little bit more time. But again, a lot of lessons learned from the mouse that have been applied to the human, and then the back and forth.
Well, that's wonderful. And it undergoes the importance of animal research, but we have to be cognizant that mice are not people. Mm-hmm. And so it really takes a team of scientists like you and Dr. A to bring the proper conclusions and to do the proper integrative studies. Dr. Wenzel, as you know, there is a COVID-19 epidemic right now, and we are worried about the number of patients being more susceptible to COVID. Would you say that patients with asthma are more susceptible to COVID? And are there any restrictions for them getting vaccinated?
Yeah, again, really good questions. And of course, we don't know all the answers with asthma and COVID. And interestingly, it's probably been one of the most controversial disease areas in relationship to COVID, which with some studies suggesting there may actually be a protective effect, that eosinophils may actually be protective, type 2 inflammation might be protective. And then others saying that the more severe your disease and the more you need treatment with oral corticosteroids, the more severe your outcomes and the higher risk you are. So really no definitive findings yet to say yes or no. If you have asthma and you have a specific type of asthma, this is the direction you're going to go in. As you are likely aware, the NIH is going to be funding a very large study of COVID across the networks that have been instituted by the NIH. And I think it's really a wonderful opportunity to use some of the molecular tools that have been applied to these thousands of patients across the spectrum to see if we now can start determining, are there certain phenotypes of asthma? Are there specific genetics, specific biologic pathways that promote either protection from COVID or worsened COVID? And certainly I've had patients with very severe COVID, very severe COVID, who've been on biologics, who've not been on biologics, who've been on oral steroids, not been on oral steroids. So even anecdotally, it's really hard to make any definitive statements at this point.
If I may move into another area, Dr. Wenzel, you have received numerous awards from the American Thoracic Society, the European Respiratory Society, and every society I can think of for your highly innovative work on asthma. I also noticed that you are the recipient of the Elizabeth Rich Award for promoting women in science. Would you be so kind to tell us a little bit more about your activities with women?
When I was growing up in science, I didn't have any role models. I mean, there were really very, very, very few women in science in general, but certainly women in the pulmonary space and women in the asthma space. You know, there were some. Anne Wilcox was probably one of my more important role models in Australia, and she died all too young, but there were very few. And I can tell you many times in a room of all men and, you know, feeling like, I'm looking around, is there another woman here? And there weren't. And so, again, I think it became very important to me at an early stage to at least, number one, be a role model, be someone that a younger woman growing up in science, growing up specifically in pulmonary, that's always been where my heart has been, that I would be a role model, that I would show that you could move forward and become successful, that you could stand up for your principles and your ideals. And if you had ideas, you know, you should not be intimidated, or do your best to not be intimidated by the group of men that you may be around, that you got as far as you did for a reason. Believing in yourself is actually important. And then, you know, I think over the years, I've been blessed with being around a lot of very talented younger women, not all of whom are at the institution that I was professionally involved at, but often through societies, through the American Thoracic Society, through the American Academy of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology, the Quad AI. All of those sorts of areas, I think, have been areas where I've been able to interact with women and I think give women the belief in themselves that I think is really one of the important things. And then I think just mentoring and being mentored by a woman, when you're a woman, can be very helpful, because we aren't exactly the same, males and females. That's good. We actually like that, not being the same. I think there are certain things that you grow up knowing, understanding, experiencing as a woman that a man doesn't.
Well, this is very important to me. I have a young daughter who is a very independent woman, and I always impressed upon her the importance that a woman can do everything. And certainly, Dr. Wenzel, you are an example of what can be accomplished. And I take great pride in Physiological Reviews that we have a number of outstanding women scientists. For example, one that comes in mind is Dr. Carol Ann Remy, who is a cardiologist in Amsterdam. Yes. Dr. Valenti, who is a nephrologist in Italy, of course yourself, and many more. This is extremely important. You know, Dr. Wenzel, we are unfortunately coming to the end. I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed this podcast. You are one of my heroes in science. And thank you so much for taking the time to do that. Anybody from the audience who has questions or comments, feel free to approach Dr. Wenzel. Thank you so much again. And we, of course, are looking forward to your continuous contribution to science and, of course, to Physiological Reviews.
Thank you very much, Dr. Madeline.